evening.
I'm going to move this, if I may, around.
Yes.
Can you do that so that I don't? Yeah, okay. All right. This is what I'm going to do. Okay?
Thank you.
I used to teach in the public schools in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. And my first year, I was given sixth grade lunchroom duty, boys. Boys' side. We had the boys' side, we had the girls' side. And I had the boys' side. I developed quite a good lung capacity, so I probably could do this without the mic, but we'll try to do it with the mic anyway. In the back of the room, you will find lists of advocacy in the nursing home, in the nursing home field. It's there for you to take. You'll also find a little pamphlet on the Ombudsman Program. How many of you know or have heard of the Long-Term Care Ombudsman Program? Two people. Okay. All right. How many of you are in the health profession? Three, four. How many of you work in nursing homes? Okay, two. In Queens? Bronx? Okay. So we've got two people who know what a nursing home is. How many of you have relatives in a nursing home? One, two, three, four. Okay. Well, the Long-Term Care Ombudsman Program, the official title is the New York City Substate Long-Term Care Ombudsman Program. The Ombudsman Program is a federally mandated advocacy program. Our client, so to speak, is not the friend, the family, or the facility. Our client is the resident, him or herself. That's who we are there to advocate for. Most of the time, family, friends, resident and ombudsman work together. But sometimes, and I'll give you some examples later on, we don't necessarily do what the complainant, the family member, wants. But the Ombudsman Program, as a federally mandated program, the federal government has given us a very, very special gift. We have what's called access. No nursing home can refuse to answer our questions, to accept a volunteer ombudsman as their regular weekly ombudsman, or refuse entry to that ombudsman or one of my supervisors or me. They can't do that. If they do that, that is an immediate call to the Department of Health, and they are told, while we're standing there, you better let them in. We're the only advocacy program that has that. That is one of our main differences with all the other advocacy programs. It is a very special gift for solving problems and for bringing the community into nursing homes. The reason why we're the complaint department. For all practical purposes, we're the complaint department. If you have a complaint about a nursing home, eventually you probably will find your way to us one way or another. We are sort of like the watchdogs to try to make sure that every facility fulfills its obligation. And this is the obligation they agree to when they become Medicare, Medicaid certified. They agree to this obligation. And this obligation is to have every resident maintain the highest practicable level of functioning. That's a pretty big statement. The highest practicable level of functioning. And that's really what gives us all the juice so to speak, that we need. I don't have to worry about any other law, right, nothing else. I don't have to worry about anything else. When I go in, and or my ombudsman, any of my ombudsmen go in, the question is that is in the back of their mind is what is being asked for to help maintain, achieve and maintain the highest practicable level of functioning. That's all we need, which is great because the laws, if any lawyers here, it's not easy to understand. Okay, all right, you're in a nursing home, and I'm basically just talking about advocacy techniques within the nursing home. I'm not talking about what a nursing home is really like or what a day would be like. We're just talking about if there's a problem, what are we going to do? Okay, will there be problems? Absolutely. Be assured something will go wrong. Why? You've got 200 residents. You've got 400, 800 employees. You've got three different shifts. You've got vacations. You've got troubles at home. You've got all sorts of community problems. So something is going to go wrong. What are you going to do? Who do I complain to? All right. Whenever you start thinking about, well, I think I have to make a little complaint here. I train my volunteers to have six things in the back of their mind to help organize their presentation when they're going to work on a complaint. Who, what, when, where, why, and how. Right. Anybody been in journalism courses? I learned that in journalism courses. Those are the six question areas. You might not be able to have answers to all of them, but those are the six question areas that should always be in the back of your mind. Okay. Now, I want to go talk to somebody about something I'm not happy with. Where do I start? You start at the lowest level of authority. The lowest level of authority. Now that can be a little bit confusing in nursing home. There are people called certified nursing assistants. These certified nursing assistants provide 90 to 95% of the care of your loved one. You're going to see them all the time. If you're there during the daytime or the evening, you're going to see them. And as I said, they provide 90 to 95% percent of the care of your loved one. However, they hold approximately 0% authority. So that's not the person that you're going to go to make a complaint. The CNA, Certified Nursing Assistants, they take orders from the charge nurse. All right? So your first stop is going to be the charge nurse. Okay, it's something to do with care. We're going to go to the charge nurse. And we're going to ask the charge nurse whatever our question, whatever it is that we need to, we would like to find out. Okay, we advise people to then, are you satisfied or dissatisfied? You're not satisfied with the answer. You go to the next level of authority. Reuben said something about not becoming a pest. Well, you're not a pest when you do that. You've got a question, it's not being answered. And all you're trying to do is get an answer. So you go to the next level of authority. And depending on the size of a nursing home, the next level may be an assistant, maybe a nursing supervisor, maybe the assistant director of nursing, maybe the director of nursing. There are all of these possible levels within a nursing home. When upon admission, you should be getting a listing of all of these important people, and you'll get it, and it'll be in something called an admissions agreement. Don't put that admissions agreement in a drawer or under the bed. That's a very important document for you in case you've got a serious problem. because you want to know what you're agreeing to by putting your loved one in a nursing home. When you sign that agreement, it's a reciprocal agreement. The nursing home is going to do some things and have some responsibilities, and the resident has some responsibilities. Okay, so we're starting from the least level of authority, and we're going to work our way up to see if we can't find an answer to our questions. I do not advise going to the administrator first. The administrator probably isn't a medical person, and if it's a care issue, he or she is just going to shoot it right back down to the director of nursing services anyway. All right. That's just a fact of life. The two places where levels of authority may not work, one is with the doctor. Let's say you have a question about medications. The charge nurse isn't going to give you any information. She's going to say, you better talk to the doctor. All right, now my advice with you better talk to the doctor, ask when the doctor is going to be available on the floor for you to talk with him or her. You call the doctor's office, the doctor's in the office, your relative's chart is back at the nursing home. He or she's not going to give you very much information because he or she doesn't have anything to look at. All right? So you want to know when is the doctor going to be available, the day and the time, the next day and time, he or she is going to be available so that I can talk to him. All right? And that's a piece of information that you need. Okay. It went through all the way. Okay. In social services, physical and occupational and speech therapy, dietary or food, same procedure. You start at the least level of authority and work your way up. Because you want to solve the problem with the least amount of trouble to you and to the facility. Okay, now I told you about the physician. The second area of problems where levels of authority probably aren't going to do you much good is the laundry. And things are going to be lost. This is where your admissions agreement comes in. Number one, have you followed facility procedure for clothing? Have you followed that procedure? You've given it to the person who you're supposed to give it to. It's been identified as your mom's blouse, nightgown, dress. It's been tagged, and it's in the chart. And you have a receipt that all of this has occurred, that you've handed it in. Right? That's basically a procedure. Right? That's a pretty sensible procedure. excuse me. You're going to look in your admissions agreement. What do they say? If they say they're not responsible for anything that you bring in, well, that's wrong. They are. And that's just a fact of life also. They are responsible. If you have done, if you have followed proper procedure for getting everything logged and identified. If it's lost by the outside laundry, these are the problems that I hate the most. If it's lost by the outside laundry, the laundry isn't going to replace anything until they receive their insurance for replacing the article. If it's lost by the facility will replace item for item, not value for value. So if you have an L.L. Bean sweater that you brought for mom, and the L.L. Bean sweater either walks, gets legs and walks, or gets thrown into the 200,000-degree washing machine and comes out too small for your chihuahua, they're not going to get you an L.L. Bean sweater to be replaced. They're going to give your mom a sweater. It shouldn't be from the clothing that they collect from those who either move or pass away. It should be a new sweater. But that's what you're going to get. and we haven't been able to do anything more than that. So I'm being honest with you with solutions. Okay, all right, now you're talking to medical people. Do you speak the same language? Probably not. You speak English, they speak medicalese. You hear something like dangle. This is my classic example. Telephone call from a niece who was visiting her aunt in the nursing home, and she's telling me that when she goes in, she sees her aunt's foot dangling, meaning it was broken. Okay? It was broken. I'm getting absolutely nowhere with the physician, with the director of nursing services. I'm getting nowhere. Broken foot is a broken foot. Why did it take 3 days to find a broken foot? All right, when the niece, when she walks in, a totally unmedical person knows immediately there is something definitely seriously wrong here. Okay, well, I call a doctor at the Department of Health, and we start a 45-minute conversation about the word dangle. And when I say 45 minutes, I'm not embellishing this to make it sound interesting. It's a 45-minute conversation about the word dangle. And finally, it dawned on me. When you're in the hospital and you have had surgery, what's the first thing they ask you to do? Get up, put your legs over, and dangle your legs and your feet so that circulation is there. Okay, so to the doctor, the word dangle